Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways which we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all my past shows, and you can connect with me on social media, should you wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, the show website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. And on the homepage, there are tabs at the top for guests and topics, which makes it easy to browse and choose the podcast you want when you want to listen to it. So I do encourage you to do that. So go to itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Italian-Canadian Camilla Derico, urban contemporary painter, illustrator, character creator and comic book artist. Camilla has distinguished herself as one of the breakthrough artists in pop surrealism's new figurative movement through her ability to seamlessly weave manga and Western styles with surrealist elements combined with an extensive emotional palette. Based in Vancouver, Camilla is a prolific artist who has released 8 books, including the best-selling Femina and Fauna and Pop Manga, and multiple comics, as well as showing her work in art galleries across North America. Widely recognized for her captivating yet playful style, Camilla Derico is a regular fixture on the comic convention circuit, making appearances at around 10 conventions each year. She's published by Random House, Watson Guptill Books, Boom Studios, Image Comics, IDW, Dark Horse Comics and more, with self-publishing roots for her literature-inspired series Tanpopo. Her books comprise graphic novels, collections of her artwork, and also instructional books on how to draw and paint. Her latest publications being Pop Painting, Inspiration and Techniques from the Pop Surrealism Art Phenomenon, and an art coffee table book entitled Rainbow Children. Camilla's work has a large fan base, which includes Stan Lee, Emma Roberts, Felicia Day, Neil Gaiman, Rhonda Rousey, Avril Lavigne, and Britney Spears. She's been covered by media such as Forbes, MTV, Huffington Post, The Mary Sue, Examiner, and Paste magazine. In 2016, Camilla has her first solo exhibition at the Corey Helford Gallery in Los Angeles, entitled Dances with Dreams, where she is debuting a new and exclusive collection of original oil paintings and framed ink drawings for exhibition and sale. An entrepreneurial artist, Camilla's work can also be seen on toys, clothes and accessories through creative partners Hasbro, Disney and Mattel. And she recently expanded her art style into fashion eyewear with Coastal. Welcome to the show, Camilla.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. You're a prolific and incredibly creative artist working in many media. I'm wondering if you can remember the first interaction that you had with a book or a picture that impressed upon you the emotional power of art, you know, beyond just entertainment.
Well, I think the very first thing I connected with was actually Sailor Moon back in the 90s. Because I'd been watching cartoons, you know, since I was a little kid, you know, watching She-Ra and He-Man and the Fraggles. But they weren't a very emotional type of series. Uh-huh. Whereas Sailor Moon, and it's very on par with the Japanese culture and the Japanese anime, is that they really push their characters to these breaking points and these epiphanies, and they evolve and they change as human beings. And I had never seen that before, and I just remember the first time I watched one of the Sailor Moon characters like die in battle. I thought, oh my god, this is too much. I was really affected by that. And I think a lot of people who probably watch the Transformers or Optimus Prime die in the movie was just as affected as I was. And that came from Japan as well. So I think from that point, I actually really wanted to do art and put a lot of emotion into it. It became an expression for me where I could get out a lot of my, at the time, teenage angst. And, instead of writing poetry, that was what I was doing. I was recreating Hamlet as a teen drama.
As one does when one's a teenager.
Yeah, I actually created a comic book with Hamlet as the prince of this mafia. And, I did this little series with him in it. And that was my intro into using even literature into comics and just really getting that expression of emotion out.
Right. Huh. Interesting. Would you say you grew up in a creative environment?
Oh, definitely. My mother actually was very artistic. Mm. And I grew up my mother had a daycare. So there was always about 20 kids, running around, and she'd have art time and we'd all sit there and we'd all be drawing. And then she'd encourage us to, play with a lot of toys and then watch cartoons. And then, she would help us actually be really creative. And I remember my mother helping me with my grade 4 assignment on huskies. I'll never forget it. She actually helped me. It was like a collaboration between my mom and I, and she actually drew some of the huskies to show me how to do it. And then it was just such a cute little moment for my mom and I. And so I would definitely say I grew up in a very creative environment.
Hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. And when did you know you wanted to pursue an artistic career professionally, rather than just doing it for your own enjoyment or a hobby or whatever?
I think it was very early. My mother had always been I'd always been watching cartoons. And I think when Disney first came out with The Little Mermaid, I think that was my moment when I'm like, this is what I want to do. I want to bring these characters to life. And so I watched Little Mermaid by Disney, and I decided at that moment, I think I was like 10, that I wanted to be an artist. And I did all the electives in high school, and I pursued all the scholarships and graduated with the intention to be an animator.
Right. So what was it about bringing the characters to life through animation or through drawing that appealed to you?
I think it was the escapism. You could see there were these colors and these worlds that didn't exist in our, day-to-day life. And you could see, unicorns, running around with rainbow bright and... It was it was just such a colorful world, and I really fell in love with the style too of like even the Little Mermaid. She had really big eyes, and everybody was just so pretty. I remember thinking, Prince Eric was very good looking. I'm like, oh, I could do that. I could draw these characters, and I don't know. I think I just always connected with them.
Right. Yeah. The lowbrow art or pop surrealism movement, as it's also known, began in the 1970s, developing out of underground comics, punk rock and hot rod culture. And as it's grown, it's developed different strands. The artist Robert Williams has taken credit for coining the term lowbrow art, as he felt no traditional art institution would recognise his type of work as art. And even though we've come a long way since then, I understand when you were studying art, your professors told you that your style of manga-inspired pop surrealism would never be seriously recognised or commercially viable. And I'm wondering how that made you feel at that point about your art and how you would proceed.
You know, yeah, it was really disheartening when they told me that, when I went into the program with my cartoon background, and they just said, this isn't art. You know, you should be focusing on realism, or you should, you know, do illustrations for book covers, and because this would never be taken, you know, seriously as an art form. And I'm a, I think I really appreciate my background being an Italian, because I'm very stubborn, and I'm, you know, my parents would say I'm very obstinate. Like, don't ever tell me not to do something, because I will do the opposite. And I think I just found it. So I was offended for my, you know, for even Japan, like this culture that embraced art this way. So I did everything in my power to turn every project I did into a comic book or a cartoon. You know, even going so far as to, we had to do a roadmap. You know, it was a design where we had to do a roadmap, and I did one of the ovaries, and I'm like, yep. There you go, roadmap for sperm, and it was all cartoons, and they were just, my teachers were like, really? I'm like, yeah, that's what you get. Like, I'm very serious about this. And then I actually ended up bonding with one of them, the one teacher that was very against the style, because he went to France, and he saw that there were just libraries of graphic novels and hardcover books, and he saw how they took it very seriously, and he came back apologizing to me, saying that you know, he didn't realize it. And so in my last year of my program, he was very supportive, and all the teachers sort of changed their minds, and they began to really be supportive of what I was doing. And you know, and now I actually go back to the college and I do talks to the students to inspire them.
Oh, what a wonderful circle to come back around. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all part of this thing of who decides what is art, you know, I mean, that continual debate, or is it art or is it not? And a great British artist that I like, Sacha Jaffrey, he said he thinks that argument is just spurious, and we should be saying, is it good or not? You know, not is it art, but, you know, is it good? Does it move me? You know, but
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So how significant is it to find the right teachers or mentors as an artist, do you think?
Well, I think it's important to a certain level. I think you can't expect teachers to understand every form of art. And I don't think it's on a teacher to really push you to be into your career. I think there's a part of you that should just know and should just strive through the hardships, even if you're not being supported. I think teachers impart their wisdom, and I think they should, the one thing they should do actually is to teach you technique over style. Mm. You know, that's the one mistake that some people make, is that they, you know, they do realism and they're like, you should paint realism. It's like, no, just teach me about shadows and light and composition, you know, using your medium, but don't teach style necessarily.
That's a really good point, actually, because I think, you know, it is terribly important, no matter what kind of art you're doing, you know, whether it's abstraction or whatever, to have the technique, because then you can break away from it and do whatever you want, but you need that foundation, I think, don't you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's what I try to teach in my book, Pop Painting. You know, it's just this book that can inspire young artists who they want to try something different. They want to be expressive with their art, and they don't want to do realism. And so I teach them my techniques, and then I always say, you know, learn from me, but then take it to your next level, to, you know, express yourself using this these lessons.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you just joined us, I'm talking to my special guest this week, artist Camila Derico. We're going to go to a break now.
to music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Camila Derico, urban contemporary painter, illustrator, character creator, and comic book artist. Camila, your artworks are colourful, whimsical, innocent, surreal. I'm always curious how artists find their particular style. Why this way and not another? Is that something you can put into words, why you depict things in the style you do?
Well, I think I definitely began in one direction with my artwork. It was very in North American in style. And then I think as I started to be influenced by the Japanese culture, that's when I changed my style. And a lot of the Japanese work is very cute. It's, if anybody's ever seen what a chibi is, you'll understand it's this super cute version of a character. So I think that was part of it. And I also think it's part of my personality. I really like cute things. And I have this French bulldog that's just like this squish face, and I can't, he's just so cute. So I think, and then, but what I really like about my, about art in general is when it has multiple layers to it and you create an emotional dialogue that way. So I like to have beauty and then a little bit of darkness. So I call it cute and creepy, and I'll have, you know, wide-eyed girls and, but then there's like elements of, it's like tentacles, or a girl will have honeycomb instead of eyes, and these little things that create a contrast.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's that speaks actually a lot to who I am as well. So,
right, you have a surrealist figurative style of painting, which you classify as new brow. And Michael Peters for Art Buzz says the new brow movement rejects the distinction between commercial and fine art. It integrates sociological, cultural, and anti-cultural platforms, accounts for the difference in geographical culture, cross-breeding perspectives. So I was wondering, what attracts you to weaving these diverse elements together?
Well, I think it's, I mean, part of it is just aesthetics. I really love the big eyes and, you know, these really childlike girls, but they're adults, you know, and it's, I honestly don't, I think I'm with him. I don't like to distinguish. I don't like these barriers where, you know, if you're Japanese, you have to do anime style.
Right.
If you're North American, you have to. I think it's like music, you know, anybody in the world can be able to do rap or country or jazz. It doesn't have to be specifically where you're from. I think if a style of music or a style of art connects with you, then you should just be allowed to express yourself in that style.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. Often your wide-eyed girls are accompanied by animal companions. Mm-hmm. What does the animal aspects and themes in your work sort of mean to you?
So every time I paint an animal, they represent a part of the girl's personality or her journey as a human. And, you know, like a butterfly can represent multiple things. It can represent freedom or fragility or death, because butterflies actually represent that in the Asian culture. And so all of these little elements come together to express or explain who she is. But because it's interpreted, I don't actually necessarily like to tell people exactly what the definition of the painting is, because I love that subjective quality of art. I love for it to be a mirror into someone's subconscious. So if they look at one of my pieces and they see an octopus with lovebirds, I actually really enjoy hearing what they think the octopus represents versus my intention for it.
Right, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, as you say, the wonder of art, I think, in all forms, you know, whether it's written or visual, is that it's a communication, isn't it? You know, you're engaging with the person, and what they bring to it can take that piece of art into a completely different place for that person.
Exactly. And it also is, you know, people can see things in the art at one time in their life, and then they can come back to it and see something else. I recently had my 10-year painting anniversary, was last year, and I saw my art. I actually took the time to look at it from the beginning to who, you know, to now. And I saw my journey as a person, as a woman in the artwork. I started out in one way, and I remember what I was thinking when I was painting that piece, you know, 10 years ago. But now what I see in it is a girl who was struggling to identify with her surroundings, you know, and I can see different symbols and different meanings in it. So, you know, it's such a beautiful thing to see a different story in art.
Yeah, that's really interesting, like a graphic representation almost of a journal. I mean, to look at your work like that, it is like if we go back and read our diary or something. I mean, but to see it visually, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know exactly my period when I was like very single, because all my girls were very sad. I'm like, oh, I had my heart broken for quite a while there. I'm like, and then as my girls got happier, I'm like, yay, Camille started dating again.
Not that we want to put all our happiness was based on a man, but...
Oh, no, not at all, not at all, but, you know.
No, I'm just playing with you.
I know.
There is, speaking of playing, there's a playfulness and innocence to your work, which is hugely popular. What is the appeal of that almost childlike innocence in imagery, do you think?
I think it's a hopefulness. I think the girls that I paint, they're so youthful, and I think that represents this the possibilities. You know, like when you're a kid, you see the world in such a different way, and it's just full of opportunities and full of life. And like children see magic everywhere. And my girls aren't actually children; they're actually young adults. But they're in the transitional period. Like when you're a teenager, you can also start to see the world in a very different way. You know, hormones are kicking in and responsibility is happening. And so I think when I'm painting my girls, it's part of that. It's part of that innocence of the world and the way that they can see possibility.
You started painting on canvas at a certain point in your career. I'm wondering what prompted that move for you.
You know, that's actually a good question, because when I was, like I mentioned, growing up, I wanted to be an animator, and then I wanted to be a comic book artist, and it hadn't occurred to me to be a gallery artist, to be a painter, because part of it had to do with, you know, my education, where the teachers told me I wasn't very good at painting, and I didn't actually care at the time. I was like, you know, I don't want to be a painter, so I don't need to paint realism.
Right.
And I graduated, and I was a commercial artist, so I was working for Ride Snowboards at the time. Like, I just finished a series for them, and I walked into this gallery in Vancouver that was a surrealist gallery, and I'd never seen art represented that way, you know, in a classic setting, in like an actual gallery setting. And so I walked in and I said, oh, you know, wow, I'm an artist too. I did some work for snowboards, because it was like a snowboard themed show. And the owner saw my work. I showed him my website, and he asked me to bring it in, and all my work was done on paper. And he ended up selling the artwork right away, and then asking me to do paintings. And I had said, well, I don't really want to paint realism, you know? And he's like, no, just take what you've done and put it on a canvas. And I thought, wow, you can do that? So I did, and it was this liberation for me. I started painting, and my first series were Helmet Girls, and in these lush colors, and there's also like I did black and white paintings, and I found a new voice for myself, and I realized that what I was doing, illustration, could also be fine art.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it did really branch my career off in two directions at that point. I continue to do comic book work, but now I also do fine art for galleries.
Yeah, and you're having your first solo show, Dances with Dreams, at the Corey Helford Gallery in Los Angeles, as I mentioned earlier. As part of the sort of lowbrow, newbrow art movement, what's the significance to you to have a solo gallery exhibition?
Well, I've had solo shows before. This is my first one with Corey Helford.
Oh, so, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I absolutely love Corey Helford Gallery. They're so wonderful. They're so excited about art, and I really love having a solo show, because it's a huge body of work. It's, you know, 30 pieces, and it took me a year to create all of it, and I can see the very first painting, and I can see the very last one, and I can say exactly where I was in my entire year. And not just it, that being a timeline, but also thematically, you know, when I'm part of a group show, the gallery sort of chooses the theme, and I go with it. But when it's a solo show, I chose what I wanted to do, and each painting represents a part of that theme. So with the Dances with Dreams, I wanted to express the subconscious mind and dreamscapes. So I created paintings where some of the girls had their eyes open, and they had two different colored eyes. And this is the first time I've really pushed that theme with the heterochromia. Mm-hmm. And those are the girls that are actually dreaming. Mm. So the image you're seeing is actually like a snapshot into their dream. And then there's girls who have their eyes closed, and in I wanted those to represent the viewer's dream. I wanted it to be so when you're looking at that, that's actually you having the dream. So it's very open to interpretation. I wanted it to be like you look at it and you're like, if you, that was your dream, how would you see it? You know, what would that mean to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the final element was there's a few paintings that you can't see their eyes, so you can't see whether they're open or closed. And those are the waking dreams. So those are the ones that you don't know whether you're awake or what, you know, are they dreaming, you know. So I really wanted that theme to carry across in the artwork this time.
Mm. Well, it's an interesting thing to ponder on because, you know, obviously a lot of philosophers have speculated that the whole of life is a dream, you know. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, actually, when I was a kid, my best friend and I thought to ourselves, thinking, what if this is actually, what if we're in a coma? And this is just the dream we're having. And then that Tom Cruise movie came out. I can't remember the title of it, but where he's actually in a coma. Do you know the one I'm talking about? Well,
oh, I'm not sure. Carry on.
Okay, yeah, anyway. So, yeah, I mean, ever since I was a teenager, I always wondered, like, is this real? Is this reality? And what it would mean if you actually woke up and maybe the sky is pink in the real world. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that whole Matrix idea of, like, our body is somewhere else and this is a dream. But then there's also the idea of, like, our spirit, if you believe in that, and a body. And so what your reality is when you're not here in this place, you know. So there's many facets to that to ponder on. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what I was trying to get through with the artwork in this show.
Yeah, sounds really interesting. And I wanted to let listeners know that you can go to Camila's website. It's camiladerico.com, which is CamilaDerrico.com. It's a wonderful website with lots of her artwork and all the different things that she does. So I encourage you to go and have a look there. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages. And I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Ciao. I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Camila Derico, urban contemporary painter, illustrator, character creator, and comic book artist. And before the break, I was giving her website. I'll just give that again. It's CamilaDerico.com. That's CamilaDerico.com. You can see all her wonderful artwork there. So I encourage you to go and have a look. So Camila, I wanted to ask you, making a living in the arts is hard. How important do you think it is to make the art you want versus making art you think will sell? Can one have an eye to both?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was, I actually came across this debate myself in 2012 when I had been doing art for a few years and I was creating artwork that I thought would sell, you know, and it's hard to get out of that that hole because you know people like you for a certain style and they like you for, you know, what you're creating. And so it can be a bit stifling, you know, when you feel pigeonholed. And I remember at the time I took a hiatus from creating art, from doing paintings. And I decided to come back after I talked to Tara McPherson, this amazing artist in New York, and she offered me a solo show in New York. And I said, "Well, you know, I don't really know because I don't know." And she's like, "Well, just paint whatever you want." And I said, "You know, anything?" She's like, "Yeah, absolutely." And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this because I need to. As an artist, I need to push boundaries. I need to just take that leap of faith and hope that people are going to respond to what I'm creating now. And so I created these. That was when I first started my Rainbow Girls. And the very first piece in that show was Beyond the Rainbow. And she had, her eyes were covered by hair, and she, there was no animals, just a hole in her chest that was melting color. And that was a very scary piece to paint because it didn't have animals, it didn't have big eyes, and those were the things that I was really well known for at the time.
Right.
You know, but I'm very glad I did because it was a very well-received show, and I made a lot of new fans, and my older fans really love it. I mean, I still get people who are like, "Oh, I really missed your comic girls, I really missed your animals." But as an artist, I have to keep pushing myself forward and not looking back or looking to what's selling. It's different when it comes to commercial work. You know, when I'm paid to do covers for novels or for comic books. And in that sense, I am creating for somebody. So I have to make the art specifically for that, you know, the fans of that style or that series, you know.
But yes. Yeah.
But when it comes to my own art, I need to express my own ideas.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's quite rare to find artistic creativity and business acumen combined. You've been quite entrepreneurial with your work. Where do you think the confidence and self-belief came from to envisage marketing your art in the way you have?
Well, I knew I wanted to be an artist. I knew that to be successful, I had to push myself. I had to do it myself. I had to do everything. And I had to not sleep for just to meet deadlines or to get shipments out. I remember living in a studio apartment, and that was my studio and where I lived and where I did all my shipping. You know, I had an online store, and I would have like mountains of shipping packages that I'd spend hours signing prints, slipping them in, going to the post office. And it was really hard, but at the same time, very rewarding, you know, because I could see my business growing, and I could see my art being received so well by people. And it just pushed me to go further. And there was a moment, though, when I couldn't handle everything. I couldn't handle all the contracts that were coming in. So my sister, who was in the business, in the financial world, she started helping me and reading my contracts and help, you know, making sure I wasn't being taken advantage of, which happened a few times. Mm. And that happens with artists, you know, because... Yeah. Legalese is very difficult to navigate. It's kind of like reading Greek if you're not Greek.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, I had my sister reading contracts and helping me, and eventually she actually turned into my manager for a few years, just helping with the logistics while I created the art.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
It's really cool, yeah. And now I have a team of people who help me, and I've got an operations coordinator. She does all my bookings and helps with the product management. And it's really nice to have that support, because without it, I wouldn't be able to create as much art as I do.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the problem, I think. You know, they're two such different mindsets to create and also to be at the top of your game creatively, and then have to start thinking about practical things. You have to really switch and beyond a point, it's impossible. So that's great that you've got a good team now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm surrounded by a lot of people who really love to see my business grow.
Yeah. You've created concepts for original toys, your work seen on clothes and accessories, including a new eyewear collection for Coastal. What makes you want to take your art into product design?
Well, I'm a big fan of fashion, and I'm a big fan of being able to see art in different ways, and what I call it is wearable art. Mm. You know, I think there's something so amazing to be able to walk out wearing a t-shirt or a dress or shoes or hats that have your favorite art on it. It's such a statement. You know, people buy a Prada bag, and you know, the other people who have Prada bags are like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, like there's this little bit of connection with them. And I have fans who walk around with my purses, and when they see each other, there's this like this moment of like, oh my gosh, you like her art too. And there's this conversation that happens, and it's so cute. I get so many people taking like paparazzi pictures, I guess, of other fans wearing clothing, or and they send them to me on social, and they're like, hey, look what I saw on the subway. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And it forms a community. And then it's also just really nice for people who have run out of wall space.
Right.
I have people say, like, I just have no more room on my wall. I'm like, well, you do have a ceiling, or I can make, you know, a little like makeup bag, and you can take that with you. So,
that must be great to have this legion of such dedicated fans.
Oh my gosh, my fans are unbelievable. They're, I call them my little bulldog fans, because they're very protective of me, and they've seen people or companies that have ripped off my art. You know, they'll see it and they know my product, so they know when someone's making a t-shirt that's not mine, or, you know, selling my prints, like, you know, copies of them, and they'll email me right away. I think the most recent one was, what is this, a cuff, you know, for men?
Yeah.
and they were being sold on eBay. And my fans were like, you don't do this. And like, someone's ripping you off. I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Then, you know, I can, they're really looking out for me. And I just love them so much.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. We got a little bit of time left. I wanted to ask you about your Tanpopo series of graphic books, which is both written and illustrated by you. The series description says, Tanpopo is a mysterious young girl, superhumanly intelligent and inhumanly emotionless, who embarks on a journey to experience emotion. With only the Faustian devil Kuro to guide her, she must enter the world of humanity and discover what it means to feel. I'm wondering what inspired you to explore this particular theme of balancing the mind and heart and finding one's humanity?
I think for myself, being Italian, I have very strong emotions. And I live in Canada where people are very, they're not reserved, they're not quiet, they're just more subtle, you know? And it was this, it's this really interesting contrast. And so I've always been fascinated by emotions and what makes us feel and how our emotions actually take part in our decision making. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to create a girl who had no emotions, but she had all the information in the world. You know, she's born from this machine of knowledge, but she hasn't experienced life. And how would somebody like that go about the world, like basing her decisions on knowledge or feelings? So, and using the Faustian devil was really important because I read Mark Twain's story, The Mysterious Stranger, and he inspired my version of the devil, where he's not a malevolent being. He's a fallen angel that has different ideas or morals. You know, he isn't, and Mark Twain says he's not, he doesn't have the concept of right and wrong. So what would a being like that who doesn't have any boundaries, and Tanpopo asks him to show her sadness, you know, you're kind of opening up this can of worms. And for somebody like this Faustian devil, he's like, well, this is how you experience sadness. I don't actually want to give away what happens.
Don't.
I know, right? I'm so bad with spoilers. So he pushes her to experience these things, and it's really such an amazing story because I use literature to drive the narrative, and I use the stories from the Shakespeare, so Richard III. And for to experience anger, and then there's also Edgar Allan Poe when she experiences fear, and I have an idea of what she's going to go through, and I have to actually sort through a lot of literature before I find the right one that fits for her journey. So I think I've read like hundreds of poems and stories just to find those, like, you know, like 10 pages that I can use to have Tanpopo experience the kind of fear that I want.
What motivated you to center the stories around classic literature?
It was a long time ago. I watched an interpretation of Faust at the Vancouver Opera House, and they had taken all the sets were contemporary. They were very stylized. And the characters, the actors were wearing traditional clothing, and they spoke, you know, they were playing Faust. Mm. But in these very beautiful sets that, you know, it was very modern, and it was this beautiful contrast that I thought was so imaginative and so inspired. And I walked out of there thinking, oh my gosh, I should try doing this with my art. I should try combining literature and manga. So when I describe Tanpopo, I say if poetry and manga had a love child, that's what this would be.
It's a very interesting concept. Yeah. We've got a few more minutes before the end of the show. All art is about communication, and in representational art, obviously the artist is trying to communicate with an audience the reality of a certain scene or figure. But I'm wondering if you're trying to convey something more than just the subject itself. What are you hoping people will experience through your art?
I hope I surprise them. I hope that when people look at my art, it's never like they expected it. You know, I always hope that it's a journey that they can take with my art, and they see elements that really inspire them. I've had people react to my artwork in the most amazing ways. And, you know, there's this one piece I did called Caged, and it's this girl who has, you can't see her eyes, they're covered up, but her chest, inside her chest is a cage, and there's a lovebird. Mm. And then outside of the girl, there's another lovebird, and it's flying, and it has a ring of keys. And it's based on the concept of finding love and opening your heart up, and whether the you know, life and love, it's not just one thing. It's not like, oh, I meet the love of my life and everything works out. It's like, it's a matter of timing, you know, the connection that you have in person. And so it's a few things that come together to find the right, you know, lock, to unlock your heart. And I was at a convention in Phoenix, and one woman walked by, and she saw I had a print of her, and she stopped. She had never seen my work before. She stopped, and she just started crying. I was like, oh my gosh, are you okay? She's like, yeah. She's like, that struck such a chord, because, you know, I just divorced, and that's exactly how I'm feeling. And she actually bought the art and just took it home, and she was just staring at it. I've never seen anyone so mesmerized. And that's the sort of thing I'm hoping, that people can see art and have that reaction. I mean, I don't always want to make people cry. I do want them to feel, and I want them to have a story and a connection with my art. And even just seeing people at a convention reacting that way, or seeing them staring at one of my paintings at a gallery opening, and just you can see the wheels turning in their eyes, and I'm always so in awe of that, you know. And
yes.
I hope what I'm putting out there just either inspires people, or it just brings them a bit of joy, or you know, a bit of color into their world that wasn't, maybe they didn't expect to see.
Yeah, and I'm very interested in the healing power of art as well. And I think the story you told about that lady, that's one aspect of that, you know, how it can help us process things sometimes and heal through them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I've had people who have tattooed my artwork on themselves because they connected so deeply and emotionally with the piece.
Wow, gosh. Well, thank you so much, Camila, for talking to us today. It's been wonderful hearing more about your work. And I wish
thank you so much. All the best
with this year. No, I was just going to say, I wish you all the best with this year going forward. You've got a lot going on, so it's onwards and upwards for you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for taking the time. I'm always just so excited to talk about art and expressions.
Well, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Well, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Remember, you can go to Camila's website, camiladerico.com, and you can also visit itsaquestionofbalance.com. If you enjoy this interview today, tell your friends about it. There'll be a podcast up on the website. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to being with you next time.